Today's hearing may have been a start on that long road, but for those devastated by clergy sex abuse, the Vatican opening up is only a start. Colm O'Gorman was abused by a Catholic priest in Ireland. O'Gorman wrote about it in his autobiography, Beyond Belief. He also founded One in Four, an advocacy group that supports men and women who've experienced sexual violence. O'Gorman says he was encouraged by today's UN hearing in Geneva.
It's another moment, hopefully, towards the eventual ending of the Vatican's impunity for not just its failure to address the crimes of its priests, but its oversight and creation of a system that actively covered up those crimes. It's certainly in my view, and I think the evidence is clear in that regard.
So while it is only a start, it is an encouraging moment for you in kind of the whole narrative of the scandal?
Yeah, I mean, if I reflect back, I mean, I was 14 when I was first abused by a priest. It was sort of 1981. And it took me 13 years to even get to the stage where I could consider reporting what had happened to me. And I mean, I'd fled my home. I'd moved to another country. I'd fled Ireland and was living in London at that stage. I'd broken all contact with my family and then gradually 4 years later re-established contact with them. But it took a very long time for me to even imagine speaking about it. And you know, naming these kinds of crimes is always difficult, but naming crimes of rape and sexual assault when the perpetrator is a priest and when the institution that one finds oneself eventually having to go up against is one of the most powerful institutions on the globe is a pretty daunting thing, most particularly within a country and a society where priests were unquestioned and unquestionable and where, you know, in every Irish home there was likely to be a picture of the Pope, and they were the biggest authority in our lives and in our state. So naming those facts in 1994, 1995 seemed barely possible. And getting to the point now where we've, you know, seen the breaking down those beliefs that institutions like the Catholic Church and figures even as high as popes could not possibly facilitate the commission of these kinds of crimes, we've begun to break that down. And I think that's incredibly important.
In your book, Beyond Belief, I mean, you describe how, like so many other victims of the sexual abuse scandal in the church, you were just suffocated by helplessness. Did you tell anyone from your family about the abuse?
Not when it was happening. I can remember on one occasion, before I became completely trapped by the priest who was raping me, trying to tell my mother that I didn't want to go with him. He was down at the bottom of the stairs in my house and I was up in my bedroom crying, saying I didn't want to go. And my mom, bless her, was running up and down the stairs between the two of us, trying to understand, but obviously not being able to imagine what the problem might be and me not being able to tell her. So I couldn't tell her. And then it was only about 6 or 7 months after I finally fled my hometown when one of my sisters found me, and I told her sort of what had happened. I told her that there'd been some sort of interaction between me and this priest, and it was clear what I was talking about, but I wasn't able to name it fully. And as soon as I'd said that, I fled it again and didn't return home for another 3.5 or 4 years.
And you didn't have the best relationship with your father, but eventually, finally, you were able to speak with him about the abuse. How were you able to get there to that point?
When I told my sister, when I told Barbara, she told my dad, and I was always terrified of him finding out, not because of what he might do to me. I didn't fear him, but I really feared the impact of him knowing. As I saw it at the time, both what I had done and what I had been involved in, I was terrified of the impact of that on him. When I went home after 4 years, we couldn't be in the same room alone because we couldn't speak to each other. We were that uncomfortable with each other. And then when I finally had gotten to a point in my life where I was starting to stop running, was the best way I can describe it, and I realised that there were things that I had to face about my past and that this was the big thing that I needed to deal with. Coincidentally, it was New Year's Eve, 1994, and at a party in her house, my father, who was a man who didn't speak of his feelings very much, drew my sister and one of his friends into a room, and he broke down and sobbed and said that he hadn't slept for 12 years knowing what had happened to me and that something had to be done about it.
Wow.
And my sister called me and told me, and I rang him the next day and said that I want to do something about this too. Let's do something. And a month later, with his support and with my family's support, I returned to Ireland from London and made a statement to the Irish police, and that began the investigation.
I mean, it's upsetting and distressing to hear these stories because these are kind of successive moments where you are opening up more and more about the abuse to different people. So with the Irish police, was that just, you know, you're opening up and the courage starts to come? Is that what happened?
when I reported it, first of all, I believed that I was going to tell the police about one bad man who happened to be a priest who did some pretty terrible things to me. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they would act to hold him accountable, but also to make sure that he wasn't doing it to anybody else. Within 6 weeks of me reporting, the detective involved called me to tell me that another five men had now made statements about acts of rape and sexual abuse that the same priest had committed upon them when they were young teenagers as well.
Incredible.
Within a year, I began to discover that the Catholic Church had known, first at the local level, then at the national level, and then at the international level. At every step as I discovered this information, my outrage grew. Not my distress, but my outrage. And that's what led to me finally deciding in 1998 that I would institute a legal case against the priest, absolutely.
But against the
bishop and against the Vatican. Yeah, I sued the Pope in 1998.
I mean, as you say, where you grew up, people had a picture of the Pope in their living rooms, practically everyone. I mean, so what did you hear from people in your community when you decided to sue the Vatican?
People thought that I was naive and foolish. And I suppose people at that point certainly didn't believe the Vatican and that the church at the institutional level could possibly be responsible for this. I mean, I had no desire and have no desire to bring the Catholic Church down. I'm not a religious person. I'm no longer Catholic, but I'm not, you know, on some fundamental level opposed to religion, opposed to the Catholic Church. But what I do want to end is the impunity that the Church has enjoyed. What I do want to end is its capacity to continue to allow these appalling crimes within its own ranks to go unchecked, including, in my view, the most serious crime, which is the cover-up of those crimes. I mean, the priest who abused me was responsible for what he did. Every single offender, every single priest who decides to rape a child or a vulnerable adult is responsible for that individual act of abuse. But an institution that seeks to cover up those crimes and does so in the interest of protecting its reputation, its authority, is one that needs to be exposed. I've never set out to harm the church. What I have set out to do is, ironically enough, I suppose, stand for the principles that I learnt from the church, the principles of truth, of honesty, of justice, of love and compassion for others, and of a sense of responsibility for other people and for their well-being.
Colm, after all that you've experienced and been through, did today's UN panel with the Vatican, did it give you any sense of vindication, or you kind of need to wait and see what happens next?
Well, you know, funnily enough, I don't need vindication. I haven't ever really needed that, I guess. I mean, I was blessed ultimately to have enormous support from my family, my partner, and those that I love. So I didn't need, at a very deep personal level, to be believed or to be vindicated. What I wanted and what I continue to want is justice.
Colm O'Gorman in Dublin, thank you for telling us your own story of abuse and your extraordinary path out of that nightmare. We're very grateful.
Thank you.